buzzer has sounded. We are headed to overtime with William Pattison on Fox Sports Knoxville. This is Fan Run Radio.
And here we go. Live from the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios, it's overtime with William Pattison, Dawson Wise, and Jace Brown joining you on a Monday after a big weekend here for Fan Run Radio.
Yeah.
The golf tournament on Saturday, huge hit, by the way.
Lots of fun.
Jace and I held it down on hole number two.
Yep.
A lot of good shots that came in, a couple that were not so great.
Yeah, Jake Miller knows.
Jake had a really tough beat. His was about a pin away from going in, getting a birdie. But fun day. Thanks to all who came out. Really good time. Plenty to talk about on today's show. Vols baseball, big weekend for them. The NBA playoffs in full effect. The NFL draft is this week as well. We'll dive more into that as the week goes on. But so much to talk about here. But first things first. Presented by the 37 Club, which provides access to unique content, exclusive events like Saturday's opportunity on the golf course, private community, special discounts on Fan Run merchandise. Join on fanrunradio.com today. And today's First Things First topic is Christian Moore elevates the Vols over the Wildcats. A record-setting performance from Christian Moore, along with contributors from a variety of others, led number two Tennessee to a 13-11 victory and a huge road series win against number three Kentucky on Sunday afternoon in front of another sellout crowd in Lexington. Really good crowd this weekend. Yeah. Moore tied the single game program record with three home runs and finished the day with four runs scored and six RBIs to lead the Big Orange to their fifth straight SEC series win. His first homer opened the scoring in the third inning and gave the Vols an early 2-0 lead, but the Wildcats quickly responded with six unanswered runs over the next three innings to take a 6-2 lead. Tennessee now improves to 33-7 on the year, 33-7 on the year, 12-6 in SEC play. They fought back, scored five runs in the top of the sixth to retake the lead as Blake Burke, Billy Amick, Dylan Dreiling, and Cannon Peebles all drove in runs in the inning to put the Vols back up 7-6. Now, Kentucky, a really good team, 32-7 on the year, 15-3 in SEC play, tough to beat, did not go down without a fight, hitting back-to-back solo homers in the bottom of the ninth before bringing in the tying run to the plate with two outs. But sophomore right-hander Marcus Phillips, who we talked about earlier this week,
yeah. Yep.
A guy that you might have to come in some of these moments,
yep.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
He came in and recorded the final out and recorded his second save of the year. The top six batters in UT's order combined for all 11 of the team's hits to go along with 11 RBIs and 10 runs scored. Burke and Dean Curley joined Moore as Vols, who posted multi-hit efforts, finishing with two apiece. Burke's two singles extended his program record long hitting streak to an incredible 30 straight games. Kirby Cannell also got in the action, picked up his fourth win of the year after a gritty relief outing of 4.1 innings. Kentucky reliever Travis Smith got the loss after allowing five runs on four hits in just one inning of work. Now, last week, when we were talking about this game, Kentucky's had a really good year. They've beaten some really good teams, swept series at home against good teams. We knew Tennessee was going into a big matchup here. Dawson, you did a great breakdown of the game. What was it, on Thursday or Wednesday when we
Wednesday,
talked about it?
Yeah.
And a lot of those things in that first matchup on Friday you saw. But Tennessee has this tendency this year to kind of get beat around on Friday and then Saturday and Sunday put out some really good outputs. And you saw that again yesterday. This was a huge series win. And you're able to get it done. Christian Moore, your star, your leader, shows up in the biggest moments. It was a really, really nice performance from him. Really good weekend for him in general. Not just talking about yesterday. He was big on Saturday, too. Guys, your takeaways from the Vols series clinching win yesterday?
Well, the resiliency's back. Look, this team, time and time again, you know, has to dig out of holes, not only in a game but in a series. In the case of yesterday, you know, had to dig out of that hole that they got into, a 6-2 deficit, and they just powered by. They just stayed in it, hung in there. and battled back. You know, several times this weekend, adversity presented itself to this team, and this team said, we're just going to hang in there, and we're going to punch back. They always had a counter punch, a counter move. And considering, you know, this is something that was lacking, you know, a couple of years back again, I mentioned the Notre Dame series because this team lacked a counterpunch in that Notre Dame series. That was good to see that this team has it and still has it, even in big series like this. Second thing, the relief pitching. Man, you just cannot say enough about this bullpen. Yeah. They have been incredible so far. I mean, superstars so far this year. In a time when the starting pitching, and again, it was not bad this weekend by any means. Don't misunderstand me there. But when we needed them to come in, we needed Kirby to get four innings. He came out and got us four innings.
Yeah.
And that's the second time already in conference play that you've brought him in a big spot where you're telling him basically, we're giving you the ball and you got to go a long time, longer than you're accustomed to. And he said, okay, I'm going to do it, and I'm going to go out there and do it well. And he did it both times, both in big series against good teams. And so that was really incredible. He's a workhorse. Just another great outing out of him and really cementing himself in Tennessee legend status so far this year, if he wasn't already, to be fair. And then Marcus Phillips, you talked about him.
Yeah.
There he is, Marcus Phillips. When you needed a guy to come out of the pen and get you a big out, that midweek experience helped so much. He got you that big out. That's so huge going forward to know you have him as an option. And then finally, clutch hitting. The clutch gene showed up in that 5-run sixth inning when you needed to break through and you finally got a chance to get guys on and break through. They broke through.
Yeah.
And were able to kind of pave the way for the bullpen to slam the door shut and take the series. There have been some slumps, been some times where, okay, yeah, you could have had some guys come in to score. You could have done better on that part. But for the most part, this team can score in the big moments. They did it again yesterday.
Yeah, the one thing that you brought up that really stuck with me was resiliency. I think that's a great word to see or to show how this team played this weekend. There were several times where this team got down pretty big, especially on Sunday, got down by four and were able to claw back and, you know, finally get on top of things. So just being able to push through that adversity is just huge, especially at this point in the season where, you know, you're already over halfway through SEC play. You've still got some gauntlet teams coming up, so being able to have that in your repertoire at the moment, I think that's something that you can continue to move forward with. I thought Kavarez Tears showed up big time in the seventh, had a big time long at bat, strung out like 9-10 pitches before finally planting a 2-run homer over the right field wall. I thought that was sort of a turning point, and you know, right when you think Kentucky, who had just tied the game once again, is going to claw back into this thing, you know, Kavarez Tears slams that door shut and says, "Come at me," and lines it up for Simo to go yard again the next inning. So I think a mix of both clutch and being able to overcome some adversity are two big things to take away from Sunday's matchup. At least
Christian Moore became the seventh player in program history to hit three home runs in a game and just the fourth to do so in an SEC game, joining Evan Russell versus Vanderbilt and LSU in 2021, Todd Helton, Arkansas in 1995, and Rusty Enser against Vanderbilt in 1981. That's a pretty good collection of former players right there to be mentioned with. Moore is also the second Vol to homer three times in a game this season, joining fellow middle infielder Dean Curley, who did so against Kansas State on March 5th. With this second record-setting performance, Moore also moved into sole possession of UT's career home run lead, passing Blake Burke for the first time. This has been a fun battle to watch all year long.
Yeah.
But talking about Simo this weekend, with this performance and just overall, what did Simo prove?
A couple of things. Firstly, he is a leader, and we knew that going in, but this series kind of cemented it to me. We talked about, you know, the guys before the season that would really determine how good this team would be. You know, if these guys are good, the team's going to be good. And Christian Moore, I think, was first on all of our lists when we talked about it. He's a veteran. He's a clubhouse leader. So when he goes, the team goes, they rally, and they did it this weekend. You know, as he started to have a good performance, look at that. Our leader in the clubhouse is having a great performance. We got to rally around that. We got to help him out.
Yeah.
I mean, they did that. He showed up, the team rallied around him, and they won the series. The second thing, this is a different Christian Moore. This guy is on a mission this year. I don't know what changed. I'm not sure if it's, you know, getting that close to glory a couple times in his career that he just wants to ramp it up. But, man, he's just able to ramp up his production even more. He was already a good hitter before this year. He somehow ramped it up this year even more. Whatever it is, he's got a drive we have not seen out of him, and it could really spell big things ahead for this team.
I think one thing that I brought up a couple months ago was Simo had at least started the year as probably the most consistent guy in the rotation. It sort of feels like that, even though, you know, Burke is still on that 30-game hit streak. I think one thing that Simo has added here recently is showing up in the big moments, because there's been, like last year, there were some points in the season where, you know, maybe he'd have a great weekend, but, you know, whenever it's crunch time, maybe there's two outs in an inning in a really big spot where you're down one or two, he just could not come up with a hit. And it feels like this series, he came up with that hit every single time that he had to. He went 4-for-5 on Sunday, which is just an incredible mark against a really good pitching staff over at Kentucky. So I think him being able to take that step ahead instead of, you know, maybe having to ask for somebody else to take that spotlight, I think that's something that he's really built on. And it really feels that he is the spark. You kind of have to be whenever you're forcing the leadoff spot, and we're not really used to seeing him there, but he's really thrived in that role, has been able to get on base and, you know, push runs across whenever the bottom of the order comes up. So I think the mix of those two, both being a spark and being, you know, probably the most clutch guy on the field at the moment right now, I think Simo can only go up.
So going back to Friday, Tennessee was unable to hold on to a late lead and dropped its series opener 5-3. A three-run seventh inning erased a two-run deficit for the Wildcats before they added an extra insurance run in the eighth to rally for their 15th SEC win of the year. However, on Saturday, Tennessee scored 5 runs before Kentucky recorded an out and never looked back, evening the weekend series with a 9-4 victory. Obviously got it done yesterday to win the series. Overall, when you look at the weekend as a whole, what were your takeaways from the weekend, and what does this weekend say about this team going forward?
So in terms of takeaways, I mean, the first thing, go back to the resiliency. You know, we talked about it in the game, in the series too. You know, this is already the third time in conference play that you've lost game one and had to go win games 2 and 3.
Sure.
You know, against Ole Miss, against Georgia, now against Kentucky. As you saw off the top of my head, it may be more than 3, but it's at least 3 so far that you've dropped game one and you had to rally and win both. And now this time also on the road.
Yeah.
Has been, you know, that's even bigger, you know, in front of a really nice crowd. You mentioned it earlier. Yeah. They filled that place for this series. This is a big deal. And to come back in this series, that was big. And it cements, you know, it cements the Vols the true number 3 team in the country. I know we talked about a little bit last week, this kind of, do we feel slighted by Kentucky being ranked number 3 and us being ranked number 4? Well, we solved it on the field and said we know now who is really number 3. And when they're, well, look, when this team's backs are against the wall, they rally. They did it again. The pitching is getting better. It's not massive improvements, but it doesn't have to be. Really relatively productive pitching weekend. I think you were one bad pitch away from a good Friday night, because obviously the 3-run inning was a 3-run homer.
Yeah.
It was just one bad spot, and all of a sudden you're down 4-3 instead of up 3-1. You held down the fort Saturday, did enough to get the win, slammed the door shut on Sunday. We talked about the bullpen performance there. It's not going to be huge improvements, but day by day, just chip away. Just get a little bit better, especially for the weekend starters, and they did that again, in my opinion. And for the most part, held the Cats off the board in their home ballpark. Mm-hmm. That's all you can ask for. And then getting everybody involved. We talked about this with basketball during the season. Well, for baseball, it applies too. And look, you got 4, 5, 6 guys every night that are productive. I mean, again, this weekend, you listed all the names of guys with multiple hits. I mean, that's something not a lot of teams have that luxury.
Sure, yeah.
This team has several guys off the bench that can come and do that, 1 through 9. I mean, the capability is endless with this team in terms of hitting. They show that again this weekend. They spread the wealth, and that's what makes this offense so deadly.
Yeah, you already said it once again, resiliency, being able to overcome those deficits is huge, even whenever, you know, you start the game hot and then they come back and, you know, really punch you in the mouth and you're left a little bit speechless. They seem to find an answer at that point. One thing, you know, pitching was okay. It just wasn't the most outstanding. You know, I thought we saw some great outings against LSU 2 weekends ago. I think, you know, it wasn't as good of a performance as that. But it feels like Kentucky's been a little bit more consistent on the offensive side than LSU has this year. They've had some big-time pop, and then there's weekends that they really don't even show up. So I think being able to stop an offense like that, that plays a lot of small ball and gets a ton of hits, is something that pitching staff should be proud of. And it really showed that power travels. Kentucky Proud Park is not a small ball field at all. I think it might be, you know, the biggest – field of play in the SEC by a good margin, and being able to crank out 10 home runs, it was huge. You know, Burke had a huge one. Dreiling had a 2 home run performance on Saturday. So being able to have that in your repertoire again, it's just so huge, especially whenever you're going to be traveling eventually to Hoover, where that place is huge, and hopefully even Omaha, where it's going to be the biggest place you play all year.
Yeah, a couple of things going into the series that we talked a little bit about on Wednesday, Dawson, was that rubber match between Tennessee's offense versus Kentucky's defense that has been really good this season. And, you know, on Friday, it took a little bit to get going for Tennessee, but Saturday and Sunday, you won that rubber match. And I think that's why you were able to come out with the series win. And that's what we said. You know, whoever wins this matchup is most likely going to take the series, and the Vols were able to not only win the matchup, but do so in pretty big fashion. Let's head to the phones. We got Joshy Boy on the line here. Joshy, what's up?
What's up, guys?
How are you?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Doing well.
William, you care if I give you guys a few player props for tonight in the NBA playoffs?
Go ahead.
The first one we're rolling with, it's in the Cavs Magic game. We're going with Gary Harris over 5.5 points, kind of follow sell high spot. And the second one, we're going with Austin Reaves over 23.5 PRA. I think the Lakers want to make it a close game. I think you're going to get production out of your supporting staff. I think it's either going to be Austin Reaves or D'Angelo Russell,
who
has a great night tonight. What are you saying?
Yeah, no, go ahead. You're good.
Yeah, that's the two ones I got.
Okay. Let me, touching on Reaves, and we're about to dive into this game here in the next segment, but, they have to have Austin Reaves be that third wheel if Russell's not able to get it going.
Be him or D'Lo.
Yeah, yeah. Either one of those guys. I mean, you missed both of them on Saturday. Russell goes 1 of 9 from 3. That's a big miss, but Reaves was really not really involved offensively either. So you need one of those guys involved, and I think if it is Reaves, he will definitely hit over that 23.5 PRA because you need him to be that third wheel. So I definitely like that pick. What was the one from the Cavs game?
Gary Harris over 5.5 points.
Okay.
For the Magic.
Yeah. That's an interesting series because – you know, a lot of injuries on the Cavs side, even though Donovan Mitchell was incredible on Sunday, or what was it, Saturday? Yeah, it was incredible on Saturday. And the Magic are a defensive-minded team. It's not the glossiest series out of them all, but, you know, having a guy like Harris off the bench is really big for them. So, what did you say, Gary Harris, right? Yeah, Gary Harris,
yeah.
Okay. Having a guy like Gary Harris as a veteran on that group, a young Orlando group, he's got to be big. And I think five is a fair number for him.
Yeah, I do too. So what do you guys think about Tennessee taking 2 out of 3 from Kentucky?
Yeah, big. You know, Kentucky jumped Tennessee in a couple of the polls last week. And, you know, a lot of people, including all of us in here, thought that was a little bit of a slight considering that Tennessee went 4-0 in the prior week and swept LSU. But look, it was Kentucky's a really good team. They've been playing well all year long. You have to respect them. And the real rubber match was, you know, Kentucky's pitching. They haven't allowed a lot of teams to come in there and put up a lot of numbers offensively versus Tennessee's offense, which is one of the best in the country, home run hitters, right? And Tennessee on Friday wasn't really able to get that done, wasn't really able to get the offense rolling to where it's been. Saturday and Sunday, you saw the performances that you've expected to know Tennessee to be like this season, and including on the road. Like, yeah, you know Tennessee's usually going to be well or play well offensively at home, knowing that, you know, the ballpark's a little bit easier to hit a home run out of.
Yeah.
Now going on the road, getting that same production, I think is very big.
Kentucky's a big part.
Yes, exactly. And Jace hit on it too. Just very big to be able to go into an opposing park and still be able to have the same offensive production that you've had at home.
I think some of the home runs we were hitting yesterday, even Simo's last one, I don't think it would have been out at all 30 MLB parks, but I think it would have been out at least half of them.
Yeah, with the way he was playing, it doesn't surprise me. He was awesome. Yeah.
So about Christian Moore, do you guys, well, he'll definitely be on the Player of the Year award list, but Condon's probably going to win it from Georgia. Wouldn't you guys agree?
Unless he, you know, tears his ACL and can't play again, I think that he would most definitely probably be the leader still. I mean, he's incredible. The Vols were able to slow him down a little bit, but he's been able to roll through almost every team he's played against. And, you know, talk about some offense, he provides a lot.
Yeah. So, did you guys see where D1 Baseball released their projections of the NCAA tournament? They had Texas Tech in our regional.
Yeah, I saw it. I didn't take a look at it. I saw it on Twitter /X earlier. Did you guys take a peek at it?
I've seen
took a small one. Yeah, I think it also had like teams like Kennesaw State with us and SEMO, like Southeast Missouri. So I mean, not the worst draw in the world, in my opinion.
SEMO versus SEMO. That'd be interesting.
Exactly. I think that'd be very interesting playing Texas Tech. We started off with them this
year. Yeah, exactly.
Well,
yeah.
Especially since the. Every draw I've seen so far for the Super Regional would theoretically have us playing Wake Forest. So you play Texas Tech, Kennesaw State, who, by the way, took 2 out of 3 from Kentucky, and then Wake Forest with Chase Burns in the Super. I mean, it's not an easy road.
No.
Guys, the committee wouldn't screw us over again this year and make us go on the road and play another Super Regional, would they?
Surely not, Josh.
If we lock down a top 8 spot, then it won't matter anyway. Somebody's going to have to come play in Knoxville.
Yeah. So what do you guys think about Felix Okupora? Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, Felix.
From
Ohio State. Taking a visit per Jordan Moore tomorrow here in Knoxville. Yeah. And the thing I like about Felix is he's 6'10", 6'11". Not a completely gifted offensive player, but what he gives you defensively I think is really big. And, you know, we talked about – before, you know, Tennessee kind of lacking that bruiser, that interior presence down low defensively, Okupora could provide that for you. So, you know, Tobe Awaka, the rumor is he's supposed to come back, but he's still taking visits. Rick Barnes and the staff have been very transparent. They're not waiting around. You know, they're forming their roster, and getting an opportunity to bring Okupora to Knoxville, I think, is very big.
And you shouldn't wait around.
No,
to walk
no,
in,
no,
to
you should
honest.
Not. Nope.
Yeah. So I know he has really good defense. He can rebound, but I know his scoring is a little bit shaky. The guy from Ohio State, Felix.
Yeah. As I said, not an offensive guy. Not a guy that's going to go give you big production there. But you've got JP Estrella and Josh. I don't know if you heard us on Thursday. What was it Thursday or Friday with Justin Gainey? You know, Gainey was talking about how Estrella is going to be the offensive guy down low, and he thinks that he and the staff believe that his production will be very big offensively, and they've got their offensive guy. Now you get Okupora, a guy that you can fill in defensively against some of the better bigs.
How confident are we that we land Milicic from Charlotte?
You know, he had his visit this weekend at Baylor. You know, it depends. I don't think he's not a starter, in my opinion.
Right.
So you're getting
him
more
come off the bench and give you pretty good minutes.
Yeah. So I think you're getting him to be your backup four, and I'm assuming Okupora would be your backup five. So that's kind of more rounding out your roster. I like Milicic. It's definitely different than anything Tennessee has seen here, a 6'10 three-point shooter from Croatia. But, you know, we've done well in the past with foreign players, you know, like Juroš and Santiago Vescovi. So I don't know what his status is in terms of if he's going to commit or not, but I know he visited this weekend. I think he'd be a good fit off the bench.
William, do the Lakers still game 2 tonight at Denver?
Joshy, they have to. I mean, you know, we're about to talk about this game here in a minute, but that first half, it was perfect Lakers basketball. It's probably one of the best it's the best they've played in a half in the last 2 years against the Nuggets.
And D'Lo was the reason they lost.
Well, D'Lo was the reason, but also
made critical turnovers.
Yeah, it was 6:05 in the first half. They're up 49-37. And then they, you know, blow the lead, you know, Nuggets call it to back, you know, like 3 or 5 points at half.
Yeah.
And then Nuggets start off that second half and you know, never look back from there. You have to play near perfect against the Nuggets. You can't have these stretches where you have a lot of turnovers and the Nuggets score 10 points in 2 minutes. That can't happen. I like to say they get it done tonight, but, you know, if Russell and Reeves don't show up, I don't see how they get this done in this series at all. They've got to steal one tonight, though.
Guys, out the door, our opponent this week, Missouri, they've only hit 7 SEC home runs this season. I hit more home runs in Little League Baseball than they did, too.
Well, Joshy, maybe they should call you up for the weekend, see if you could could help them out. All right, when we come back, we'll ask the question, can the Lakers bounce back against the Nuggets tonight when we return on Overtime?
At First Bank, we're proud of more than 100 years of financial strength. But on game days, our numbers look even better. When they're lighting up a scoreboard printed on a jersey or in bold type on the sports page. We know there's strength in numbers and nothing stronger than the bonds formed around local teams. And the return on this investment? Neighbors coming together again year after year. Bank where community is number one. First Bank. Bank local. Get more team spirit. Member FDIC.
Are you ready to play hard and work harder? Are you looking to take the next step in your career with a company who celebrates hard work and appreciates those who do it? Then it's time to join the movement at Axel Logistics. Axel is looking to expand their award-winning sales team with logistics consultants who are outgoing, ambitious, and thrive in a fast-paced environment. If that sounds like you, visit axellogistics.com to learn more. Make sure you tell them you heard about it on Fan Run Radio. Axel Logistics, now is your time.
Your tax refund belongs to you, not an identity thief. Over $6 billion in tax refunds were flagged by the IRS for possible identity theft last year. If you're in a bind this tax season, LifeLock can help. They monitor and alert you to identity threats you'd miss on your own, even if you're careful with your personal information. And if you do become a victim of tax-related identity fraud, LifeLock has U.S.-based restoration specialists ready to help solve your identity theft issue. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. Let LifeLock help protect your financial info so all you have to worry about is what you do with your tax refund. Go to LifeLock.com, save up to 25% off your first year. The promo code is HERD, promo code H-E-R-D, to save up to 25% off your first year. LifeLock.com, identity theft protection starts here.
Life insurance. Why are you putting it off? Can't afford it? Too much hassle? Think you don't need it? There's lots of excuses for putting off life insurance. But if you weren't there, who would pay the mortgage and other bills? With Ethos, you could be covered in 10 minutes and boom, family protected. Ethos, fast and easy online term life insurance. Up to $2 million in coverage with no medical exam. Some policies as low as a dollar a day. Answer a few health questions and get your free quote at getethos.com. That's GetEthos.com.
Blackford Veterinary Surgery Referral specializes in surgeries not regularly performed by your pet's general veterinarian and currently accepts referrals from vets all across the country. With their newly renovated state-of-the-art surgery center and their highly trained staff, clients can rely on professional and thorough care. If your vet says that your pet needs surgery or rehabilitation, ask for a referral to Blackford Vet and let them get your best friend back on its feet. Located conveniently in West Knoxville. For more information, visit BlackfordVetSurgery.com.
All right, back here on Overtime on a Monday. We appreciate you listening in. Now time to flip over to the association, where the NBA playoffs are in now full gear after opening weekend took place this past weekend. And one of the games that we want to talk about, the Lakers and Nuggets, and in many ways, the Lakers 114-103 lost to the Nuggets in Game 1 of the Western Conference first-round series, felt like an extension of the previous 8 losses. Nikola Jokic was the best player on the floor, with Los Angeles finding no way to prevent him from scoring easily or generating wide-open layups and threes for his teammates. Jamal Murray hit circus shot after circus shot in the second half. Once the Nuggets decided to up their defensive intensity, in execution in the second half, they were on a different level than the Lakers, who came out really hot. D'Angelo Russell struggled, looked unplayable. Denver has now beaten the Lakers 9 straight times with little indication that this thing's going to turn around anytime soon. The need to play near perfect basketball against the Nuggets was a common refrain for the James Harden, or excuse me, not James Harden. I saw LeBron James and Darvin Ham, and I put James Harden from James and Ham in the days leading up to game one. And for those first 18 minutes of game one, the Lakers appeared to be doing just that. They played perfect basketball, up 49-37 with 6:05 left in the first half, precisely executing their offense and powering their way to the rim. They were shooting 61.3% at that point. The Nuggets were shooting just 37.8%, and the Lakers were 16 of 21 on two-pointers. Anthony Davis, LeBron James winning and outscoring the star matchup, 30-19. However, from that 6:05 point on, things quickly crumble for the Lakers. Denver outscored Los Angeles 77-54 over the final 30 minutes of the game, and the Lakers never were able to find a way back into it. My takeaways from game one are this. Everyone knows you had to play perfect, and you did it for 18 minutes. But where the train went off the track, if you will, was when the Lakers got sloppy. A lot of turnovers, and sometimes, I'm not knocking on LeBron, but sometimes when he gets tired, you see some sloppy turnovers. As a result, the Nuggets capitalize, go on a 10-0 run, cut this thing to about 2 points right before the half. You know, LeBron had that three, but yeah, it was a closer game than the scoreboard actually said. So the Lakers' big knockout punch that they threw to begin the game was now countered and really taken away. Nuggets open the second half and run away with it. D'Angelo Russell and Austin Reeves have to be better. D'Angelo Russell, last year in the series, was unplayable, got taken out, was a starter, taken out of the series. Averaged 6.3 points a game. That can't happen again. And in the game on Saturday night, goes 1 of 9 from three after shooting 42% on the year. You cannot have D'Angelo Russell play that poorly again tonight and going on. And then finally, the Lakers' defense against the pick and roll has got to be tweaked. It's got to be adjusted because they'll throw Jokic the ball up top, around the three-point line, right around the free throw line, and they will just be able to run their sets so seamlessly to where they've got so much movement, so many guys moving, that where the Lakers are having to pick their guys, and meanwhile, you got like Aaron Gordon coming up right behind you for an alley-oop opportunity. They've got to do a better job of icing the screens. They're not doing it. Naturally, the Nuggets are able to play their style of basketball. Lakers have to make defensive adjustments, especially in the pick and roll. Or I don't know how they can win this game tonight. Yeah. Dawson, what do you say?
I agree. The role players got to be better. I mean, I said that when we previewed the series last week, is that you're going to need someone not named LeBron James, not named Anthony Davis, to have any chance of winning this series, let alone game one. Now, you got that for a while. I kept looking. I was like, well, okay, maybe we were right. Maybe L.A. playing Denver now was a good thing, but Denver's a buzzsaw. And you cannot falter. Those guys cannot hit any kind of cold streak because the second they do, Denver pulls away, especially on home court. They're so good on home court. As soon as L.A. started running out of gas, Denver, they smelt blood in the water, and they pulled away. So you're right. You got to make defensive adjustments, but the key is going to be you got to have somebody else help contribute. Yeah. Because Denver has so many guys that are going to contribute, and you have to overcome, Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic and the deadly scoring attack that they present. LeBron and AD can't do that themselves.
No.
My biggest takeaway is you need more help, and it's going to come down to the two guys we've been talking about, and that's Reeves and Russell. And if they're continue to be inconsistent to not good, I don't think the Lakers can score a win tonight either. And if they don't win tonight, I mean, it's dire straits for L.A.
Yeah, you said it, William, the best that I could. It was such a picture-perfect start for the Lakers. You're up 8 after that first quarter. I'm sitting there, and I'm like, you know what, maybe we have a chance to at least compete with this squad. And, you know, rolling into the second quarter, even, you know, while the Nuggets are clawing back into it, I'm still pretty positive because, you know, like you said, LeBron hits that, you know, 35-foot three-pointer right before the buzzer, and you're like, okay, get a little bit of momentum back before that third quarter. And then Denver decided to show up at home and really just started running with it. It was so sickening to watch D'Angelo Russell put up 20 shots and miss about 15 of them. I can tell you, just, you know, after watching him struggle against Denver last year and have such a good regular season this year, just to see it go back to that form, it's so just, you know, demeaning at this point. It's like he flips a switch and, you know, gets so tight in the playoffs and just cannot overcome himself on that. That was a big one for me. I still don't get how you don't take that first half momentum that you do have. You know, you're up at halftime against the number two seed. You've lost to them 8 times in a row. You know, maybe you keep that charge rolling, but you know, Jokic looks like an MVP out there for the most part, and you know, all the role players playing well. Michael Porter Jr. had like 19 points. Aaron Gordon pulled down like 11 rebounds. You just cannot have that happen. I think, again, it plays up to, you know, the volume for D'Angelo Russell. You do need him to have some, but you really don't need him shooting the ball 20 times night in and night out, especially on off nights like that. I know shooters shoot, but, you know, when you're off, you really have to, you know, find another outlet there.
Denver did not have a turnover in the second half, which is an indictment of the Lakers' defense and its lack of disruption for the game. The Nuggets dominated the offensive glass 15-6, second chance points 18-8, turnovers 6-12, transition points 21-14, and points in the paint 64-54. Is Denver just too good? I think is the question that is starting to kind of be raised here, because I liked a lot of the things the Lakers were doing. I think AD needs to be on Jokic a lot more, because having Anthony Davis on your team and losing the second chance points battle and the points in the paint battle by pretty wide margins is unacceptable. But Jokic, is that good? Is he too good for an all-NBA defensive player in Anthony Davis to really be neutralized? I think they need to put him on Jokic more, because we didn't see a whole lot of that in game one. Is Denver just too good for this Lakers team to find a way to win?
Well, I said so last week. I said I still just thought, even with losing guys like Bruce Brown, that this Denver team was still, like I said a minute ago, a buzzsaw that a lot of teams are going to really struggle to beat. I still think that's the case. I think they're too good for more teams than just the Lakers. Don't get me wrong. It's not just LA. It's going to be borderline everyone in the Western Conference. I mean, that's just how good that those guys are, that their stars are. At controlling a game and getting you these kinds of margins on second chance points and things with Jokic at the rim. And I think the Lakers, they found something in this game, certainly, that can work. The problem is they have to do it for more than 18 minutes, and is that going to be possible? I don't know. I think Denver's a team that wears you down over the course of a game. I talked about that last week. They did it to L.A. in this game, just waited and waited and waited until L.A. faltered, made a few mistakes, and took advantage. I'm going to say yes until the Lakers prove otherwise.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. It feels like they're a little too complete to compete. I sort of threw a rhyme in there, but, you know, we've been talking about it. This Denver team is, you know, so deep. They can go like 5 guys deep on the bench and still have similar production as their starters. So I think that's something that nobody else really in the West, like you said, Dawson, can really compete with on that margin. But for the Lakers, it feels like that margin's not that big comparatively to some other teams, but you know, you really can't go out there and get out rebounded by 10, you know, have 8 more turnovers than Denver and expect to win. You know, and it really did get sloppy late from D'Angelo Russell. It felt like some of the, like Joshy called in and said, some of those turnovers were just bad. You talk about just throwing it to the Nuggets just on a regular pass. It was absolutely ridiculous to see. And you know, the continued struggles late are really hard to push over. I just, like y'all have been saying, to overcome this and to close that gap, get some production from, you know, your role players. Like Rui Hachimura didn't have the game of his life on Saturday. So I think, you know, you step him up, get him close to, you know, more towards 15 or 18 rather than less than 10, and you might can compete with these guys a little bit more. But, you know, having to crawl to the bench and rely on like Max Wood or Christian Wood, Max Christie, it's really starting to, you know, it feels that Denver has taken that step up.
Yeah, I hate to, you know, punch on D'Angelo Russell here, but Russell finished with 13 points, 6 of 20 shooting, was again the face of the Lakers' shortcomings against Denver. Last postseason, talked about it a little bit ago, but averaged just 6.2 points per game on 32% shooting, 13% from three against the Nuggets in that Western Conference final series. Moved to the bench in game four, you know, only played 15 minutes. Yeah. D'Angelo Russell is the X factor for the Lakers, in my opinion. If he has a girlfriend, bring her to Denver. Hopefully he'll play a little bit better.
Side.
because it just seems, I don't know what it is about the Nuggets, but he isn't able to replicate what he's done all season long. And he talked about it after the game, saying, I think I was more locked in defensively, trying to make sure I stayed on the court that way, to where I wasn't really getting in an offensive rhythm. So maybe tonight he's able to find the balance between locking in defensively and finding his shot offensively. The shots he took were good looks. He wasn't necessarily forcing them. But 6 of 20 for your third best player on the team, or the guy that has been your third best player this season, is not going to cut it against the defending, you know, NBA champions. D'Angelo Russell is the X factor tonight, and he will be throughout the remainder of this series unless you can get Austin Reeves to, you know, fill the role as that number three like he can. But Russell's been a lot more consistent with it, and you need that three-point shooting. Russell is the X factor for me.
I agree. I think he could be. I think it's Reeves because on nights when Russell, like he said, is, you know, not as locked in offensively, if you can get any kind of production from Reeves, you can still match what you can do with D'Angelo Russell. So I think it's Austin Reeves personally because, again, now if Russell has that same performance tonight, you're going to need Austin Reeves. And if Austin Reeves has a big night, I think you're going to be in this game. So for me, it's more Reeves just because of the, you know, lack of consistency, especially against Denver, that we've seen from D'Angelo Russell, especially in the postseason. For me, it's Reeves, but I can see where you're coming from on Russell also.
I would probably throw it on D'Angelo Russell, really, unfortunately, at that, because it really feels like whenever he's on, this team really does play at a really high level. We saw, you know, how they ended the regular season, one of the better records ending or after the All-Star break, you know, and that's when D'Angelo Russell really started turning it up. He felt like he, you know, had to prove himself on the trade block, and he did, and he was able to finish that regular season on a really nice clip, ended up averaging about 18 or so this year. So being on an upswing on that, just to see that clink down, it really is demeaning. And, you know, when this team is so used to that high production from him, especially late in the year, seeing it just go away like that, it's just so detrimental. I think they rely on him too much to have performances like that, because it really does show whenever he doesn't show up. And, you know, like you said, Dawson, whenever it comes around, whenever these role players aren't really putting as many points up like you should, this team is completely different, and they just pale in comparison to the Nuggets on that front.
All right, talking about tonight's game, the adjustments the Lakers need to make in terms of having a bounce back tonight. It starts on the defensive end. I highlighted it in my opening monologue about this team. It's the pick and roll awareness defensively for the Lakers. The Nuggets, you know, they're going to run through Murray and Jokic. They know that they're going to try and get them off by focusing so much on Murray and Jokic. Then you've got guys like Michael Porter Jr. or Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Aaron Gordon sliding around, backdoor cuts. It's kind of like you're watching a show, but you got stuff going on in the background that you're not really paying attention to. They've got to do a better job on the pick and roll. Ice the screen, quit switching, and quit trying to go over. It's allowing the Nuggets to do what they want to do. And as a result, once they get down into the paint, you've got a one-on-one decision for, usually it was LeBron, do I, you know, guard Jokic or Murray, who's in front of me, or do I, you know, take the, you know, like an Aaron Gordon coming into the basket? It's a tough decision. You're creating a two-on-one. That's what the Nuggets want to do. They've got to do a better job in the pick and roll. My second thing, Gabe Vincent. You brought him here for this series. He played 8 minutes on Saturday. He needs to play more. Jamal Murray struggled against Gabe Vincent's defense in the finals last year. You brought Gabe Vincent here to play in this series, and he played 8 minutes. He's got to play more tonight. I know he's not as great offensively as Russell has been this season, as Austin Reeves is offensively, but you need Gabe Vincent in this series. It's why you brought him here. Put him in. And then finally, D'Angelo Russell. He's got to be better than one of nine from three, six of 20.
Yeah.
Bottom line, they're not winning this game if he doesn't play well. Putting up 6 of 20 shooting is what Joshy Boy probably did in YMCA basketball, like Missouri's teams, right? No, it's not a stray, but Joshy, that's not a stray. Joshy would shoot better in YMCA basketball than 6 of 20 from Russell. That's what I'm sorry, Joshy. That's what I meant.
For me, the biggest thing, he kind of covered a lot of the stuff I was going to say. The biggest thing for me is if it's not working with Russell or if it's not working with Reeves, you have to be quicker about just getting other guys involved, throwing stuff at the wall and seeing if it works. Because if you just continue to let Russell go out there and shoot 6 for 20, that's not going to work. You got to get off it quicker. Go to Rui Hachimura. Go to Gabe Vincent. I was actually going to bring up Gabe Vincent as well.
Yeah.
He's the type of guy – look how he played in the playoffs last year. He's the type of guy that can buy you a playoff win if you give him the opportunity to. They did not in game one, which I think was not a great move, against a guy who, by the way, just played against the Nuggets in the last postseason.
Yeah.
In the finals, no less. But you got to get more guys involved, and you got to do it quicker, because as soon as you falter, you got to move to something else, or the Nuggets are going to take advantage, they're going to pull away, and they're going to win another game at home. So for me, the biggest thing you can adjust is to go to other guys. Go to Hachimura and Vincent and others and see if you can ride them to a Game 2 win.
Yeah, I think you got to find, a fourth scorer, because you usually know what you're going to see from LeBron. We've talked about it. AD, we've talked about it. And Austin Reeves, like you were just hitting on, whenever D'Lo is off and he's been your primary 3/4 to go along with Reeves, you really do have to dive into that bench or have a guy like Hachimura step up when, we only saw Hachimura drop in 7 points. I mean, you're not really wanting to see Torian Prince go out there and put up 15, but, if it has to come to that, if D'Lo's on an off night, you absolutely have to do that. One of the other things for me was, William was talking about, just find a way to at least slow down the pick and roll, them being able to go down that and just work the magic that they can with it. Just about every one or two times up and down the floor, it's really not a sustainable way to play defense if you're going to let up, an average of like 1.3 points a possession. If it came to it, it's really not a fundamental brand of basketball to just keep letting that happen. So surely, if in the NBA you can find some coaches that can really figure that out, sure to implement that as well. And last thing, be big on the defensive rebounding. You got out rebounded by 10. Aaron Gordon pulled down 6 offensive boards. You really can't have that happen, especially when he's not going to be a primary scorer. Take advantage of the little things like that, and you might have a chance.
Lakers and Nuggets set to tip off tonight at 10 p.m. Eastern time. Late night for me tonight. I guess if y'all stay up for it as well. Late night for all of us.
Yes.
All right, when we come back, we'll give our best bet. Stick around. Braves set to first pitch at 7:20 as well here on Fan Run Radio. We'll be right back with our best bets.
Ever been the coach who realized the team's gear just wasn't up to par? Well, if I'm being honest, that was me. Just a downright irresponsible and plain bad coach. Then SM Athletics changed the game. I want you to picture this. I walk into their store, a coach with a vision. SM Athletics didn't just see a coach. They saw a team's potential. And they delivered custom uniforms so striking. Our team's spirit soared. From cutting-edge apparel to top-notch equipment, SM Athletics transformed.
Fan Run Radio is proud to present the 37 Club, an exclusive community of the lifeblood of Fan Run Radio. You, our biggest supporters. With a membership to the 37 Club, you receive exclusive content like podcasts, blogs, and videos, giveaways, and access to exclusive merchandise and events. So join the 37 Club today by going to fanrunradio.com.
A brand built in Tennessee and born from the love of the game. Inward Half revolutionizes golfing comfort. Crafted by a former pro and dedicated enthusiast just like you, our luxury performance wear guarantees you stay cool and comfortable through every swing and every day. We're not just a brand. We've set out to create a lifestyle for those who understand that impeccable style and premium performance are a whole in one. Enjoy the walk-in with Inward Half.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Go ahead, feel your engine. Admire that perfectly installed exhaust. Your vehicle's moving along this freeway like it was made from fresh installs and a whole lot of love. With eBay Motors, you get over 122 million parts to keep it running. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, they'll be the perfect fit every time. Plus, at these prices, well, we're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
I was afraid to cut the cord, but once I did, I couldn't believe it took so long to do it. Paying too much for my cable bill had become a bad habit. I either wasn't getting what I wanted or never knew where to find any of my favorite shows until it was too late. Plus, the prices just kept going up. Thankfully, I discovered a new way to watch, called Philo. For just $25 a month, I can catch all my favorite shows on networks like BET, MTV, and TLC. It even has Nickelodeon for my kids. I can watch anytime I want, anywhere I want. Plus, Philo lets me have up to 3 streams at once, so everyone can watch what they want at the same time. Throw in the unlimited DVR that saves all my favorites for up to a year, and this really is the best deal in TV. I just wish I hadn't waited so long. Sound too good to be true? Well, try it out for yourself, and you'll see why people who love TV love Philo. Go to philo.tv, that's philo.tv, and start your 7-day free trial now.
Life insurance. Why are you putting it off? Can't afford it? Too much hassle? Think you don't need it? There's lots of excuses for putting off life insurance. But if you weren't there, who would pay the mortgage and other bills? With Ethos, you could be covered in 10 minutes and boom, family protected. Ethos, fast and easy online term life insurance. Up to $2 million in coverage with no medical exam. Some policies as low as $1 a day. Answer a few health questions and get your free quote at getethos.com. That's getethos.com.
Lil CC on a beat. Yeah, yeah. I mean, where the f- should I really even start?
All right, back here on Overtime on a Monday. Time for our best bets of the night. And I'll begin in the association with the Cavs and Magic under 204. These are a couple of teams that don't shoot the three ball particularly well. On Saturday, the Magic went 8 of 37. Cavs were 8 of 30. The final was 97-83, but it's important to note, Cavs did not go over 100 points at any point last year against the Knicks either. Magic are a defensive-minded team. I expect the same tonight, under 204 in the Cavs-Magic game.
Chose to go on the spread, Cavs minus 5.5. Orlando, man, I'm really high on that Orlando team, and I have been all season. They did not look good at all in game one. Mm-hmm. And it's possibly just because it's a really young team. You know, they don't have a ton of guys that have been there before. Obviously, Gary Harris has. So we'll see if maybe they get him more involved tonight. But just at a 5.5-point spread, only scoring 83 points in a playoff game, not a good sign. They're going to need more out of those young guys tonight as they kind of get their feet wet here in the playoffs for the first time. And against the Cavs team, really going into the playoffs, we kind of figured was not going to look very good because of injuries and inconsistency. I figured the Magic would look better. They did not. Until they prove me wrong, I'm going to stick with Cleveland, so I'll take Cavs minus 5.5.
Sticking in the Eastern Conference, I'm taking the 76ers plus 5.5 at the Knicks. You know, Saturday, it felt like New York sort of pulled away thanks to some, you know, miracle circus shots. Josh Hart was hitting just about everything he threw up late in that one, and Miles McBride went 5 of 7 from 3. I don't think we'll see a repeat performance on that sort of things. And, you know, Jalen Brunson didn't shoot the best on Saturday as well. So I think if the Sixers can sort of keep that train rolling for the Brunson success side of things, I think they can keep this thing close and maybe even snag a game tonight.
All right, next up, sticking in the association, 76ers and Knicks over 206 and a half. Both these teams did not shoot particularly well in game one on Saturday, but it did go over. Joel Embiid, his status up in the air. I'm sure he will play, but he's not 100% healthy, and he kind of gives it up defensively so he can be big offensively. I'm expecting both these teams to shoot better tonight, over 206.5 in New York.
Sticking in that game, I'm going to take the spread. Sixers plus 5.5 as well. Philly keeping it close in game one. Again, some weird shots late in that game kind of allowed the Knicks to pull away. They got the feet. They got their feet under them in this series. I think they're going to make this one even more scrappy here in game two. Joel Embiid is not going to be denied in this series, 100% or not. I mean, even less than 100%. Still going to give you a ton offensively.
Yeah.
And his supporting cast, you know, Tyrese Maxey, they will rebound tonight, I think, no pun intended, and make this one interesting in New York and tie the series, head it back to Philly.
I'm going to go to the Western Conference now. I'm taking, sadly, the Nuggets -7 against the Lakers tonight. I don't really want to rely on D'Angelo Russell, especially if, you know, the postseason woes continue to go. And it feels like it's not going to be just a one-game turnaround where he finally figures it out. It's going to have to take a couple games where slowly chips away and finally turns that corner. I don't think that happens fully tonight. I think Denver pulls away like they have in their last 9 meetings.
All right, and those are best bets of the night. Stick with us here on Overtime. A brief segment on the way as we get you ready for the Braves, who are set to have a first pitch at 7:20 here on Fan Run Radio. Stay right here with Overtime.